the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Easter joy. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. It's not Easter Sunday, but it is the Easter season. We celebrate the resurrection of the Lord for 50 days. We most times think about 40 days of Lent. We don't think so often about the 50 days of Easter. But in fact, we take longer to celebrate the joy, the glory of the resurrection than we do preparing for the great mysteries of the cross and the resurrection. And well, we should, because what we seek to do is we seek to bring the life-giving, restoring power of Jesus' resurrection to our world. And we are, right now, on the verge of Earth Day. And so Earth Day is a day set aside for all persons of goodwill to appreciate the importance of the created world around us and the importance of it as God's gift to us and what we do to give thanks to God and also to steward well that gift of creation that we hear. This past Holy Saturday night, I listened to, again, a beautifully, beautifully read reading in the church that I was at of the story of creation. And as we went through those 6-7 days of creation, it was just wonderful to kind of hear all of the great things that God created and how he did it. And the poetic imagery is just wonderful. I mean, just a little refresher, which we all know, is that the Bible, we believe the Bible is true. We don't believe it is a scientific history book which tells us exactly every detail of an experiment or of a building project like creation. But we believe that it communicates God as the creator of the world, and it does it in just such beautiful imagery, such beautiful poetry that kind of in kind of the darkness of the Holy Saturday night, we have the opportunity to kind of let our minds kind of imagine a little bit all of the beauty of creation, all the created things, the seas, the land, all of those things, and to give glory to God for creation. And so appropriately this year, kind of Easter comes just right before Earth Day when we kind of reflect upon how important it is for us to take care of the earth as the gift of God's creation. So it's a happy, happy coincidence that that kind of Earth Day and Easter come very, very close together. So, you know, in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Richard Fuller, who is the head of Pure Earth, which is an international organization based in New York that's dedicated to solving pollution problems in countries throughout the world. And, you know, they pay particular attention to the healthcare risks of lower middle-income countries and to see what can be done to improve that. And so he's going to share with us some of the successes that his organization, Pure Earth, has had in some of the environmental cleanups in developing worlds and how it's one global problem that with attention, with care, we can probably make an impact in. So that's going to be our first guest in a few moments. And then kind of later on in the show, we're going to be speaking with the head of one of our own Catholic Charities affiliated organizations in New York, David Schuffler, who is the President, Executive Director of Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. And that's a youth empowerment organization in the Soundview area of the South Bronx. And David will be sharing with us what Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice has been doing to help kind of revitalize the Bronx River watershed. Not one of the major waterways in the whole world, but, you know, it is a little bit of a river. I'd probably call it the stream. I'm from the Bronx, so I can kind of say that. And it's even got a parkway named after it, the Bronx River Parkway. And boy, that got pretty polluted, and through a work of a lot of people, at least they're making an impact there, and they're trying to deal with a roadway that is not too old, but boy, it's thrown off a lot of pollution, and they're going to see if they can maybe convert that into some type of natural walkway and a park that will be much less polluting of the neighborhood there. So that's what's on our agenda for kind of Just Love today as we continue to celebrate this Easter season, which is a wonderful time in which we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. So let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Richard Fuller, the president, the CEO of Pure Earth. Richard Fuller, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Monsignor.
Great. So, Richard, give our listeners a little sense of your own background and how you got involved with the work you're doing now.
Sure. I'm an engineer by training, and I had a career in business that did reasonably well.
Okay.
At a certain period in time, I thought that what I really wanted to do was something contributive. And I looked around in the environmental sphere.
Hey, you know, I got a lot of real respect for engineers, and I think they make a major contribution when I go over a bridge and it doesn't fall down. So I think engineers make a really important contribution to my safety and my life. So I don't think all that was wasted, your time in business, but anyway.
I think you're right, and the engineers are really the hidden backbone. Some people have said it's the geeks who will inherit the Earth.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I like
it. It's very cute.
Yeah, it is.
But it's true that much of the development that goes on in the world really relies on that basic know-how that engineers bring to the world.
But anyway, I interrupted you as you were about to tell us how you were kind of making the transition for holding up bridges. I don't know if you did that to doing something else. So please continue with your story.
Sure. So actually, I was working in environment through that time. And what I realized was that we had this enormous unmet need of something that we thought we had fixed back in the 50s and 60s, but really hadn't been solved properly. And that's this pollution problem.
Okay.
So here in the U.S. and in my home country of Australia, in the 50s and 60s, after Rachel Carson's book and after a lot of terrific pieces of legislation and the creation of EPAs and the like, we really managed to get a good handle on pollution, so we've got clean air and clean water and clean soil. And for the most part, these issues have been pretty well addressed. But what I found was that in the developing world, where the majority of the world's population lives, they haven't gone through that process. And instead, the air is terrible, water is in bad shape, there's chemicals and waste all over the place. And it's causing a lot of health problems. And this is something that we're not focusing on. It's something that we need to focus on, just the same as we're focusing on climate change. And doing so can really benefit millions, if not billions, of people in low and middle income countries.
So give our listeners a little bit of a hint, or a little bit of an idea of, as you said, in some of the developed countries, we seem to have gotten a handle on some of that pollution, whether it be air, whether it be water, whatever. What were some of the things we did? Because a lot of our listeners weren't around in the 50s and the 60s. So give them a sense of what were some of the steps we took as a society, as countries, to kind of make our environment cleaner.
We have done some marvelous things, and I'm not saying it's all completed. There are still problems.
Right.
We talked about one in the Bronx River. There are still problems out there. But we had the Cuyahoga River that caught fire and from industrial effluent. We had places where people were, steel mills were causing air pollution that was so bad people couldn't see further than 50 meters from air pollution. We see pictures coming back from Delhi and Beijing that show air pollution like that on our news feeds these days. But we had those same problems in many of our towns and cities back at that time.
And what did we do about it?
So we brought in strong regulations and controls and set up standards for emissions from car vehicles. We put catalytic converters onto all of our cars. We brought in cleaner fuel so that the diesel fuel was low in sulfur. We put controls on the power plants so that there are scrubbers, so it's not smoke that comes out the top, but much, much cleaner air. When we also did things related to cleaning up hazardous waste. There's now a piece of legislation here in the U.S. called Superfund that cleans up the most toxic places around where there's been mercury or lead or some other contaminant that might be poisoning children living around.
So, you know, we're speaking with Richard Fuller, who is the president of Pure Earth, which is an organization that is kind of dedicated to trying to deal with pollution problems, not so much in the developed world, but in the developing world, low and middle income countries. And we're just kind of recapping a little bit some of the things that happened in the United States that did make a dent on pollution. You know, Richard, when you mention those things, I bet you a lot of those things, they were kind of invisible to most of the population. And they didn't require much change in people's behavior because nobody knew whether there was a catalytic converter or not. You just kind of turned on the car and you drove. What was under the hood was not of most concern to most people. You went to the factory. There were scrubbers there, but who knew the difference in that? It almost seems like the things that we don't have to do anything personally to change, they tend to be more effective.
It's true that this is about governance.
Right.
The problem, though, is that that same sense of good governance hasn't yet occurred overseas. We're doing a study right now, Monsignor, and it follows on from His Holiness's encyclical from a year and a half ago on pollution. And by the way, that was just a superb document.
It
really established how bad these problems are around the world and our moral responsibility to do something about pollution.
Do you know what I got the most comments on?
Yep.
I got the most comments on, you mean he wants me to turn my air conditioning down? Not the most important,
but going to unsolve the problem, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. No, but what again, going back to your other point, the point we were kind of getting on seriously, we don't like to sacrifice. We don't like to do things that cause us a little bit of inconvenience. And if we can throw it under the hood of a car and it doesn't cause me too much problem, okay, that's fine. But if I got to be a little bit warmer in my house because the air conditioner isn't running so strongly, that's maybe something a little bit, a bridge too far for me.
Well, the problems that need to be corrected don't have those sort of qualities. It's exactly as you said. They're things that need to be implemented by businesses, with governments controlling and managing them, and they'll, for the most part, be completely invisible to the general population. But they'll save lives. So we've got a study going on right now that is almost completed that will come out in a journal called The Lancet, which is the most prestigious health journal out there. And it shows that pollution kills 9 million people a year. That's one in every six deaths is caused by pollution. And it makes pollution the largest cause of death on the planet. And that's astounding that what we're putting out into the world is poisoning our neighbors to the extent where it's become now 10 times larger than malaria, 9 times bigger than HIV. It's 15 times larger than war and murder. It's just an enormous cause of death out there on the planet.
So let's get very concrete. That is an amazing statistic. So what does that mean, that somebody goes to a river and they drink water and it's polluted and they die of poisoning?
Yes, it's a series of different kinds of diseases that are caused from either contaminated air, contaminated water, or contaminated soil. Now, we always used to think that the main diseases that we got from pollution were infectious diseases, where you would get diarrhea and children would die because of an infection, or you'd get a bad cough or bronchitis that would turn into something terrible. But now we know that most of the pollution that's out there also causes cancer and cardiovascular disease. And so what happens is when you're exposed to contaminated air, for example, you're more likely to get lung cancer later in life, or you're more likely to die of a heart attack because it's damaged your arteries. So these non-communicable diseases now make up 70% of the burden of death from pollution. And that's really the new piece of knowledge we need to take in. We know this about smoking already. Now we need to know it about pollution.
That is a really, really, I think, important factor. And I suspect that there will be those who will say, you're exaggerating. It's not real. The kind of the numbers aren't that high. There's a lot of other factors involved. Do you anticipate some of that pushback?
You know, if you go and dive into the way that this data is done, it's very conservative numbers.
Okay.
And the folk that are pulling together the data for all this, they're very cognizant of those sorts of issues. And it's stuff that is put together by the World Health Organization and by groups that are, you know, the best scientists in the world. And I don't think we'll see anyone say this is exaggerated. In fact, I think we'll find that as the science gets better and we look deeper into new types of diseases and more exposures to pollution, that this number will rise. So
we're speaking with Richard Fuller, who is the president of Pure Earth, which is an organization dedicated to trying to deal with the pollution problem in low and middle income countries, and kind of to make sure there's an awareness about how pollution puts human health at risk. And he's just talking to about a new study that's about to be published, which kind of documents the fact that pollution is a leading cause of death, with attributable to maybe about 9 million deaths a year. And so I'm delighted that Richard is on the show. So, okay, Richard, you sold me. I think we got a major problem. It's something that we don't want to continue. So what do we do about it?
Well, this is the good news. There are very solid, capable solutions to these problems. And the proof is in the pudding that here in the U.S., we have managed to get a very good hold on pollution and health. And there are ways and strategies that Pure Earth has been doing for the last 15 years overseas of cleaning up acutely toxic problems, of fixing neighborhoods that have high levels of death and disability, where children are really badly impaired. And we just need to keep doing that more and more. We've had about 80 projects over the last couple of decades affecting 4.5 million people. And the more we do, the more lives we can save. I can give you a few examples if you like.
I would love. Give me an example of some of your favorites.
They're tragic favorites, but they're success stories. We have a town in Africa, for example.
Which
where
country?
There was a smelter that was taking lead from the ground and then selling it. And lead, as you may know, it's toxic. The main problem is that at quite low levels, it causes brain damage in young children and reduces their IQ and causes disability and all the rest.
Now, for the sake of our listeners, is that why there's a great deal of concern if there's lead in paint in schools and classrooms?
Exactly.
Okay.
And also in water pipes in Flint.
Right.
Lead is really a nasty toxin out there.
Except if you're Superman and you need it to fight against kryptonite.
Yes.
Okay.
I wish that's exactly.
All right, so I just want to make, you know, it's not all bad.
Exactly. Okay. There is some value to it.
Okay. I'm sorry, Richard.
And lead is a product that's used in car batteries, which has, you know, had a profound impact on our lives and for the better. And it can be managed safely. It's just when it's not managed properly and it gets into little bodies that you end up with these terrible problems. And in older people, you end up with people dying much younger than they should, because lead also causes heart disease in the same way that smoking does too. So in this one town in Africa, we found 200,000 people with lead levels that are 50 to 100 times higher than they should be.
Ooh.
And at levels where the intellectual impairment is off the charts and an awful lot of death. And we've started doing program work of cleaning up the place neighborhood by neighborhood. And we're seeing the lead levels come down dramatically. We're seeing healthier children, and we're seeing places where there's now a future. Because if you're always sick and your children are brain damaged, there's no future for those places.
Yeah. So how do you bring down the lead? How do you do it?
You have to take the lead away from where people are exposed to it, and it's in the soil. So what we've been doing is going into people's backyards, measuring where the toxic lead is, and it's come from an old smelter that's now closed down.
Okay.
And we dig up the bad soil, cart it away, and then replace it with clean soil. All the time measuring the children, helping them with nutrition, and training people how to make sure that they don't bring in the wrong stuff later on down the track.
You know, Richard, I mean, it seems to me that's just such a clear way to kind of impact positively what's going on. Now, isn't there always, like, you got to figure out the cost and the benefit, because what you described does cost some money, doesn't it, to do?
Actually, not much.
No?
We've done two neighborhoods with about 200 houses each, and it's cost us less than $1,000 a house. So this whole project will be only $1 million or $2. The second phase of it and the larger phase of it is about to get underway with the World Bank providing that money.
Okay.
And but overall, the cost benefit for this, they measure in terms of the cost of a year of life saved. So this is like how much you spend that someone lives 1 year of life longer. And anywhere in the U.S., that number would be terrific for anything in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Right.
Here, our cost for year of life saved is somewhere around $3 or $4.
Now, if I were Richard, if I were kind of a pure market economic analyst, and I really said, well, okay, it's nice if we let somebody live a little bit longer, but I don't really care about that. What I care about is, so what? How much wages is that person going to owe? If we keep that person alive, what's their personal domestic product? How much are they going to produce? Any studies that kind of do a correlation of the economic productivity of somebody who stays alive for a longer period of time?
Absolutely. And this is also part of that new report that will come out soon. And what we found is that the economic value in terms of productivity from pollution as a whole is costing the world around 2% of economic growth. Now, that's only in low- and middle-income countries.
Right.
But somewhere between 1.7 and a little bit over 2% in terms of growth is being lost because of air and water and soil pollution.
Wow. That's
a big number.
It is a big number. You know, that reminds me, a couple of years ago, no, many, many years ago, I was invited to an event at the White House, and President Clinton was talking about a situation in Southwest Africa at that point. And he was talking about how the economy there was devastated because of the rampant prevalence of AIDS among the 18 to 34-year-old male population. And he drew the corollary saying, if you can't keep that population healthy, your economy is going to be in the tank, because that's among the most productive work years. And if a large extent of the population is so sick they can't work, your economy is not going to be producing what it should be producing. So I always remembered that. And what you're telling me now is a little bit reminiscent of that.
You're exactly right. And the HIV epidemic really parallels this issue with pollution.
You've been generous with your time, but I want to know, come on, tell me one more interesting project that you worked on that of a success story.
So I don't know if people realize, but mercury, another serious toxicant.
Right.
The main source of it nowadays comes from gold mining, and not big companies who are doing it, but small guys who are just doing it to make enough to feed their families.
Now, is this, again, for our listeners, is this the same type of mercury stuff that we sometimes get concerned about when there's too much of it in fish?
It's exactly that.
Okay.
And this is where that mercury from small gold miners will end up eventually getting into the tuna that then causes problems for us ourselves. It ends up migrating through all of the Earth's ecosystems and ends up becoming something that's toxic for our own population.
Okay, so what are you doing about that one?
So the way that they mine the gold and use mercury, they use mercury to absorb the tiniest parts of gold out of the rock, crush the rock up, throw mercury into the mix, and mercury and gold melt together, and you end up with a lump of mercury and gold amalgam. They then torch that, and the mercury bubbles up into the air and then ends up in the ecosystems, into the rivers and lakes, out into the oceans, and into the tuna fish that we end up eating. It also ends up in the lungs of the kids from the family that's doing the gold mining. So there's a terrible epidemic of mercury poisoning in these communities. But there's a very straightforward solution. There's some other technologies that people can use which don't use mercury that actually are more productive in getting gold out of ore. They need to be trained in how to do this. And once they're trained, they end up making more money without using mercury. And it's a win-win for them.
Hey, you've kind of teased my so tell me the secret elixir. What's the different methodology that does it cheaper and better?
The method of doing it is to take the ore and use methods to concentrate the ore using different kinds of sluice boxes or different kinds of techniques that end up getting a higher concentration of rock and gold together, and then using at the final end borax to extract the gold out of that high concentration.
Okay. That's the Ronald Reagan borax, the 20 Mule Team borax stuff?
Same stuff.
Wow. I should get a prize for guessing that one. So listen, one last thing and then I'll let you go. What's on your agenda for the next year or so? What do you see as the major areas you want to concentrate on? What are the major areas where we can really make some more dents in this problem of pollution in low and middle income developing countries?
Well, your listeners can be a part of this solution.
Okay.
We've got projects going on all around the world that cost small amounts of money that are lacking in funding. For example, there's a project to clean up mercury in Kyrgyzstan that only lacks $2,500 that will affect the lives of about 5,000 people.
In Kurdistan?
In Kyrgyzstan.
Ah.
We have dozens of projects like this all over waiting to move forward.
Okay.
Where we can go in and look after these local populations and protect local kids. If people want to get involved, they can go to Pure Earth's website, call up one of our team members, and talk about providing some financial assistance, if they're technically capable of providing some technical assistance into these projects. Together, we can really go out and solve this problem on the ground.
You know, I think there might be a way for kind of us to partner together, because I know a lot of the younger professionals who are involved with Catholic Charities in a variety of ways, certainly the environment is high on their, you know, priority in things that they think demand their attention, demand society's attention. So there might be a way we can kind of get some of them intrigued to get involved in some of this.
Well, we welcome all the help we can get. This is an area that's been forgotten in the development agendas. And if we can simply get a bit more focus to this, the more effort and energy we can do, the more lives we can save.
Hey, Richard Fuller, president of Pure Earth, a group that is working to solve the pollution problem, low, middle-income countries. Thanks so much for being our guest. Would you tell our listeners the name of your website? And also, would you tell them the title and the projected date that they can probably look on your website to learn more about the study that's being completed?
Sure. The website is pureearth.org. The study will come out of the Lancet sometime in the summer. And I don't have a full date on that, but
okay.
When it does come out, we hope that we'll get a lot of press And it should be quite visible.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks for taking the time.
What a pleasure. Pleasure to chat.
Thank you. Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, this is Just Love, our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world. And we talked about the wide world today and issues of pollution. It's the time of the resurrection. It's Earth Day. And it's a time when we kind of celebrate God as the creator of all the earth and us, we having responsibility to be good stewards of that creation. So one of the ways to love is to love our neighbors by protecting the environment that is the kind of common home that we share. And so join us when we come back in just a few minutes on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Okay, this one's for Gabby.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is the Easter season. We're only a week out from Easter. We got 50 days to celebrate this and celebrate the story of God's creation and the story of our redemption, Jesus being raised from the dead and bringing new life. And we kind of lead off our Easter vigil with the story of creation. And we focus this week particularly on that aspect of rebirth and being reborn because we're celebrating with the entire world Earth Day. And so we just had a wonderful conversation with our first guest, Richard Fuller, who is the president of Pure Earth, working to solve the pollution problem in low and middle income countries, and some just very practical ideas and some very good successes that have been made. And the startling statistic that in some way pollution can be traced, pollution can be the cause of about 9 million deaths a year. And that's a lot of deaths. What our guests indicated, that's about 1 in 6 deaths can be attributed to pollution, particularly in low and middle income countries. And so I'm delighted we had a chance to speak with him. And just in a few minutes, we're going to speak with David Shuffler, who is the head of Youth Ministries and for Peace and Justice, one of our Catholic Charities affiliated agencies. And we're going to be a little bit less global and a little bit more local and talk with him about what's happening at the Bronx River and a road up there, the Sheridan Expressway. And so I'm delighted that he's going to be with us. But before we go to David, Tom, what's some news we got for our listeners?
You know, Monsieur, when Mr. Fuller and yourself were speaking, you were talking. They were both talking a little bit about how our environment used to be fairly polluted back in the 50s and 60s. And as he indicated, there was a number of laws, the environmental protection laws and such, that wound up taking place. Interestingly, the new EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, just announced that there was going to be at the Environmental Protection Agency a back-to-basics agenda for the EPA, which he described as protecting the environment by engaging with state, local, and tribal partners to create sensible regulations that enhance economic growth. And this agenda includes a number of things, Monsignor. One thing they were looking to do is to review the Clean Power Plan and the Waters of the United States rules, which were two rules left over from previous administrations that regulated both the air and the pollution in the air and the water, as well as he promised that the EPA would be trying to clear a backlog of new chemicals that were awaiting EPA approval. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. We're having this conversation today, and the EPA is going to be looking at some of those rules. So we hope that when they're looking at those rules, we kind of hope that they look at them in such a way that still protects human life and health.
Well, one of the things that, Tom, thank you for bringing that up, and that's a really important issue from our perspective of kind of Catholic social teaching. Today, protection of the environment is one of the major kind of tenets of Catholic social teaching, that it is part of our responsibility as Christians to take care of the environment, clearly raised up to a new level by the encyclical of Pope Francis last year on the environment. Poetically, he refers to Mother Earth as our common mother that we all share, and our responsibility for doing that. And this is where we get into a little bit of problem and difficulty, because there is that debate about if you put a lot of regulations, you put a lot of environmental regulations on, it's going to slow down economic growth. And so, you know, there are some buzzwords when you hear things talked about, when you talk about doing environmental protection in a way that fosters economic growth. What it usually means practically is that you're going to reduce the amount of regulations that there are. You're going to relax some of the levels that are acceptable. And so you're always worrying that, is it too much relaxation? How helpful will the regulations be? Now, I work in an environment in human services where there are just so many regulations, which I know from my perspective just don't help. They don't improve the quality of services. They don't improve accountability, etc. But sometime over the course of decades, they were added for a particular purpose. They supposedly had a good purpose, but they no longer do it. So I have to say, I'm one of those who says, hey, not every regulation that we put in place is one that is actually achieving the goals that we want. So I have no problem if we look at the regulations. I have no problem if we say we got to make sure they're not needlessly kind of slowing down business and economic growth. But I also know at the other time, sometimes you can relax them so much that you basically are opening a floodgate in which there's the opportunity to pollute when, as we just spoke with our first guest, by putting that catalytic converter in, now we have a lot more breathable air, which is a good thing. So I do think we need to pay attention to what's going on in government with regard to the environment. And, you know, I think there are some concerns because you gotta be a little careful with regard to that. On the other hand, you also just can't say that, you know, more and more regulation is going to get us a better and better environment. That's not true either. So it's a little bit of a balancing act, but we clearly come down on the side of saying, hey, our regulation should be reasonable, but we do have to protect the environment. We can't say it's only about economic growth. We have to say there is a balance. And listen, I'm old enough that when I've listened to these conversations over the years, I've never heard any regulation proposed that somebody on the other side didn't say this was going to really, really get in the way of business growth. This was impossible. It was going to be too costly. It's the usual kind of back and forth that goes there. So I think any time that anybody says, no regulation, no good. And then on the other side, when anybody says, well, we have to regulate everything. No, that's not the right answer. We need reasonable regulations that kind of reasonably protect the environment, that businesses have to deal with in a way that is reasonable, because we all do have a responsibility, individual citizens, corporate citizens, to protect Mother Earth for ourselves, for our neighbors, and for future generations. So, Tom, thanks so much for pointing that out. You know what? I think we'll take a break, and when we come back, we will go to our next guest, who is David Shuffler, the Executive Director of Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. So in this Easter season, what better time than to just love? Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Happy Easter. I still say Happy Easter because there are 50 days of Easter. And Happy Earth Day. And what better time to celebrate Earth Day in the Easter season when we celebrate the resurrection, the new life of Jesus. And in spring, when we celebrate kind of the rebirth of the season of growth. And so this is just a wonderful time for things to come together. Now, I have to say this year, God was really nice in cooperating on Easter Sunday. So I want to thank God, at least here in the Northeast, for what a wonderful, beautiful Easter Sunday. I want to remind you, God, that there are 50 days of Easter. And after the first day of Easter didn't do so good. I'm feeling a little bit cold here today. So let's get back on track with the 50 days of Easter and making it nice and warm and bright. So, God, you're paying attention. We need a little bit more Easter weather to celebrate these 50 days of Easter. So let's go to our next guest, who is David Scheffler, the Executive Director of Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. And I consider David a wonderful colleague and friend. He's been doing youth empowerment work with Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice for a while in the Soundview area of the Bronx. David, thanks so much for joining us on Just Love.
Good morning, Monsignor. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, and you can tell me you told me so, because I want to ask you about your wonderful project of trying to, I'm using the word, decommission this Sheridan Expressway, which when you first told me, I said, hey, no way that's going to happen. And now, at least it's getting some traction. So give our listeners a little bit sense of what's going on with that project. Let me set it up a little bit. So New York is pretty congested, and we got roads, and wherever we build roads, you disturb neighborhoods, especially if they're big roads, et cetera, et cetera. And for some reason, you correct the facts for me, David. Some way, something happened probably about 30 years ago. I don't know. How long is the Sheridan Expressway?
It was built in the late 50s.
Okay, the late 50s. So it's 50 years old or so, and it's basically the road to nowhere, because it connects roads that don't need to be connected, quite frankly. And I'm born in the Bronx, so the engineers who came up with it, they can criticize me, but I'm saying it's a road to nowhere. But anyway, so this was built some 50 years ago, which is really recent as roads go. So what's happening with it now, David? And tell our listeners about this project, how it fits in with the environment, Earth Day, and tell us about it.
Absolutely. So for all your listeners, my name is David Scheffler. I live in the Bronx River Soundview neighborhood. That's the sort of catchment area of Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. And sadly, our neighborhood has been coined the Toxic Triangle. And that's a result of oversaturation of four highways in our neighborhood. We have the nation's worst highway, the Cross Bronx, the Bruckner Expressway, which is also fairly heavily trafficked, the Bronx River Parkway, as well as the Sheridan Expressway, all form this triangle that causes some of the highest asthma rates in the entire country.
And to our listeners, you know, I need to go to a little confession, because I travel a number of those roads frequently, so I'm probably contributing to some of the pollution in David's neighborhood. So I kind of need to do a little penance for that, David.
Sure, Mark. Okay. I mean, these roads are really set up to get folks through our neighborhood, not necessarily for residents of our local neighborhood to necessarily access them. When you look at who's driving, it's not necessarily folks in our immediate neighborhood.
No, not at all.
Cars, yeah. Many residents don't own cars. But the Sheridan Expressway is a 1.25-mile highway that runs along the Bronx River, which is the only freshwater river in all of New York City. In our neighborhood, it runs about a mile. And for a long time, the Sheridan has disconnected community residents from the waterfront. Along with that, the Hunts Point food distribution market trucks coming down the Cross Bronx were traveling on the Sheridan, getting off of local streets and barreling through our neighborhood, causing accidents and, again, some of the highest asthma rates. So a lot of our campaign was really focused on looking at getting trucks off of local streets and creating direct access for trucks into the food distribution market. So we got some great news this year from Governor Cuomo, who's committed $1.8 billion to the project, building new ramps that will which will allow for trucks to access Hunts Point, taking them off of local streets. This is a great victory for the neighborhood. And when you talk about this theme of Earth Day, this is one of those things that you know, we really connect to or reconnect. Changing the built environment to make it more green.
So let me ask you this question. Is part of the whole plan that eventually that there won't be any more cars or trucks on this 1.2-mile Sheridan Expressway, and it'll be either a pedestrian mall or a park or a walkway? Is that what the ultimate goal is?
So where we've finally landed on the plan is that currently the Sheridan Expressway is an 11-lane highway, including the parking lanes. We're pushing, and the governor is looking at reducing the amount of lanes from 11 lanes to somewhere closer to 5 or 6 lanes.
Okay.
This will, you know, this is a major diet for the Sheridan Expressway. But also one of the other benefits and features that we get in this plan is pedestrians will be able to walk directly across at 3 intersections of the Sheridan Expressway. So it's really opening up the waterfront for West Farms and Crotona Park East residents to be able to walk directly into this park, this beautiful park and beautiful waterfront that they haven't had access to for many decades.
Now, this is a little personal, my question, because I know the road a little bit, but if you still have like 6 lanes or 5 lanes, or this, how are people going to walk across?
So, you know, similar to the west side of Manhattan.
Okay.
When you think about Chelsea area,
right.
You know, that waterfront as well is sort of what we're looking at modeling, right, where at critical intersections there will be pedestrian-friendly crossing and safety measures that allow for folks to cross.
So they're going to put traffic lights?
Yes.
Ah, okay. So, not overpasses or underpasses, but traffic lights.
Traffic lights.
Yeah, I bet you this goes through a lot of changes over the 27 years between the proposal and when it happens. But that is great. That is great. I'm glad that I asked my question, because I was thinking it was going to be eliminated and it was going to be just kind of a walkway. So it's not exactly going to be eliminated, but it's going to be reduced to that.
Yeah, it's going to be modified. It's going to go on an extreme diet, and it will be a boulevard.
That sounds great. Now I want to let's get back to the Bronx River. I think you know, a fair number of people may know that what's called the Hudson River is not actually a river, and as you pointed out, the Hudson River is not fresh water, it's salt water, but, you know, everybody thinks of it as a river. But I do think certainly the people in New York, the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area, knew, like going back years, how polluted it was, how icky it was, and, you know, nobody would ever go in it. And I think, you know, a little notoriety that Pete Seeger and some other people tried to clean it up. And I think most people agree that the Hudson River now is much, much, much cleaner than it was 50 years ago. So tell us a little bit of the history of the Bronx River, because I know you've worked on the Bronx River for a lot of years. Tell us where it was and where it is today and the transformation.
Sure. So as many of your listeners know, a lot of New York City's waterfront was used for manufacturing and hauling and industry and a lot of stuff. So as a result of that, a lot of the waterfront, especially the Bronx River waterfront, was left toxic and polluted as a result of the use of the river for many, many decades. So a lot of our efforts were focused on dealing with some of the ailments that were left behind from years past and really bringing life back to the river. So a lot of our efforts has led to, you know, a revival of the river. We pulled out 21 cars with the help of the National Guard and Army Corps of Engineers, along with tons of our partners, the Bronx River Alliance and other local groups as well, too, like the Point, CDC. We pulled out 3 tons of debris, just junk that was in the water, and over 15,000 tires were all removed from the Bronx River from the time that we were working on this from the early 90s to now. And what we've seen is a complete transformation of the Bronx River with tons of fish and wildlife and birds. And so it's really exciting just to be able to go to the waterfront. The other thing that we've done is really focus on taking blighted property, right, eyesores in the neighborhood and turn them into waterfront parks. So we have 2 claims of fame parks that we've worked on, a concrete plant park, which has this industrial relic inside, which is now a 7.3-acre waterfront park. We also have Starlight Park, which was the site of a former manufactured gas plant back when Con Ed manufactured gas, and that's now has been remediated and turned into a 13-acre waterfront park. So
now, are all of the things you're describing now, are they right on kind of the shores or the banks of the Bronx River?
Absolutely. This is the Bronx River. You get no closer to the Bronx River than these parks. Any closer, you're in the river.
So, I mean, I was born in the Bronx, so for the sake of our listeners throughout the country, it's really the Bronx stream. I mean, it's not, we shouldn't think it looks like the mighty Hudson River. It's kind of a little bit more modest in terms of its depth. Its width. It's kind of a really nice thing, but it's not terribly wide in most places, right?
It varies in different places, right? I mean, in certain parts of the river, we've seen it get as deep, and it can get as deep as 17 plus feet, right?
Okay.
We actually, as much as we've cleaned up the river, we also strongly encourage, you know, safety,
right,
on water safety measures, and actually, we, you know, discourage folks from, like, getting in the water itself, right? You know, canoes or other personnel around that. So we run canoe tours, but they're all supervised, and my staff and team are trained up. So as much as the Bronx River is beautiful, we also want folks to enjoy it from a safe distance. So, you know, we see folks fishing and crabbing, you know, catch and release. There's tons of canoes and boats. Folks get to enjoy the river.
And it's accessible? I mean, people can just walk there? Can they take, like, a hike up and down the shores of the river?
Yeah. So the Bronx River runs 24 miles in full length from the Kensico Dam up north and goes empties out into the East River. And much of the Greenway, right, a lot of advocates of the Bronx River Alliance and local community groups up and down the entire freshwater river of the Bronx River have been looking at creating a Greenway.
Okay.
Basically is, opportunity for folks to be able to reconnect the neighborhood. So there's 24 miles of Greenway that has been built throughout the Bronx, Yonkers, and Westchester, all connecting the northeastern region.
You know, it's interesting, and David, you probably know this, but I suspect that a lot of our listeners don't know this, that this is almost kind of a revival, and I don't know when I would put it. I'd probably put it in the 30s or 40s, almost 80 years ago or so. The Bronx River Parkway was primarily built not as a way to get people by car from one place to the other, but one of its primary uses was for a nice leisurely drive where people could experience the river, could experience the trees around it, and it was just like a very pleasant family Sunday afternoon drive. Now, kind of the irony of that is we often now say if we're going to do something like that, well, let's make sure there's no motor vehicles, no cars, no pollution. But I think what you're doing is the best of conservation, going back to an original purpose of it, but now taking into consideration what we've learned about pollution, how we should do it now. So you're a revival effort of what was a very traditional kind of family friendly, environmentally friendly reality. So anyway, yep. So listen, thank you for the time that you are spending with us. And thanks for both of those projects and making us more aware of it. David Scheffler, Executive Director of Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. This is the Catholic Channel. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan on Just Love. Join us again next week. And we're still in the Easter season on Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.